Thank you for the organizers for asking me to give a presentation to Bob. I'm not obviously one of Bob's students, but Bob and I both started as graduate students in the South. And if I first met him, I believe in the late 1970s at a national meeting in Houston, Texas. And one of the comments that we both had in common was, we always got the same question. You all from around here, are you, boy? And you talk funny. Well, of course, Bob always never did lose the Boston accent. It was part of his charm. But he always impressed on me that Bostonians are very conservative. They save their R's, like fama, for very important words like dater. So, and so, that's Bob O'Neill. Natural enemies in soybean aphid are critical in the control of this exotic pest that has ravaged the upper Midwest in soybean. And one of the, if you look at the feeding guilds of insects that are here in the upper around, we have all these a variety of insects, some naturalized, many native pathogens that are out there. And this one is light in color because that's an area that's missing in the U.S. We just don't have a lot of parasitoids for soybean aphid. And so that stimulated a group of us partly involved with the regional biocontrol, but also involved with soybean aphid research. And then, of course, Bob's favorite little bug, aureus. And I'll be giving some of the data that Bob and his students have collected about this very important predator in the system. But one of the things that we recognized early on was that we're going to have to go back to the center of origin of soybean aphid and take a look at what's present. And so we did some climate matching, so the northern islands in Japan and northern parts of China match very well with the upper Midwest, where we were hoping to look for parasitoids of soybean aphid. And over the years, we've been fortunate to have lots of people involved in the foreign exploration of soybean aphid. And of course, Bob was integrally involved in that, and all. And the stars here represent areas where foreign exploration has occurred. And just, well, this is, the map is from 2001 to 2006. There's foreign exploration that has continued through 2008 and planned trips for 2009. And this is just a summary of where people have gone and who's gone. But one of the things you'll see is that the O'Neill and the Votland team show up a lot. Often going to Japan. One of the things that Bob often talked about was, statistically speaking, beer is not significantly different from water. And so when you go to these areas, you have to make sure you drink the local water. So we have a lot of colleagues and friends that we've met good contacts we've met throughout the year. This was the first trip I was involved with Zishan Wu, who's now our quarantine officer at the biocontrol facility at the University of Minnesota. And George Heimpel was with me on that trip. I think he's actually that purple shoulder right there. But Dr. Lu Zhenming right here is a soybean breeder. And the name's slipping me, and maybe George can help me. I can't remember the name, but he got his degree at Purdue. He's an agronomist, a PhD agronomist, who was at Purdue and was helping serve as a translator for our group here. And we spent many hours searching the fields for soybean aphid and soybean aphid parasitoids. And this is the first plant we found in Harbin, China, with soybean aphids. It took us 8 hours to find a single plant with a single colony of soybean aphids. And probably the most remarkable thing was that It was a very large field, some 40 hectares in size, and we found 40% of the aphids on that plant parasitized at that time in July in 2001. It was very eye-opening to say, okay, we now understand, we think, you know, from sample of one plant, you know, we are jumping a little bit, but parasitoids are incredibly important in the natural enemy complex of soybean aphid in Asia. We've also, several of us have traveled to Japan, and we're searching lots of areas, not only in vegetable soybean plots, which at that time of year was what was available to us, and also in buckthorn, looking for a variety of parasites on soybean aphid and related species. And of course, a trip to Japan always was, and Bob O'Neill always seemed to travel with you know, one of the premier aphidologists, David Votland. I wish David were here, because many of these pictures that I have are from David. And you know, good colleagues and good friends that we've met. Tomatsu is in the audience here. He's right here. So say hello to him tonight. He's facilitated a lot of our foreign exploration in Japan. This is a partial list of the species that we have in culture and have been studying. I don't do that work. There's much better people than me: George Heimpel, Kim Holmer, Keith Hopper, containment labs in USDA ARS in Newark, and the facility in St. Paul campus have done the lion's work of this work. And one of the remarkable things is that, you know, we've maintained 48 distinct parasitoid populations in culture in the two labs I mentioned. We've done exploration in Japan and China, and Kim Holmer has done a lot of exploration in South Korea. And we made our first release of an exotic parasitoid in 2007. Unfortunately, we didn't recover that in 2008. George and his students are modifying the release protocol and spent this summer working out better protocols to do the releases, and we'll have 8 states, I believe, as in the proposed work in 2009, releasing Binodoxus communis in North America. One or two more parasitoids are on their way, and host range testing is nearly complete, and a proposal will go to USDA APHIS to allow us to continue to release new species. So in a very short period of time, with a lot of effort on a lot of people, but a considerable amount of effort with Bob, we've been able to do the foreign exploration, the discovery of agents. We've been doing the quarantines and safety testing, the release in the field, and the evaluation of efficacy and establishment. And once we find a species that's worthy of widespread mass rearing and collection, we're poised to do that. And I think the soybean producers in North America are going to benefit greatly from the contributions of Bob and of his efforts in importation biocontrol. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out a fact here. Now, here's a group. I don't know where this shot was taken. I believe that's Kim Holmer there, and, you know, studiously studying the buckthorn, getting a lesson from his colleagues. But there's somebody over on the side. I don't know what to put in the bubble. Doesn't look as quite as enthusiastic about buckthorn as he does about soybean, but, you know, it's a trooper. He's there. He's going to help out whenever the duty calls. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out the fact that Bob's impact in soybean aphid is really focusing on conservation, keeping the ones you have around, maximizing their benefits. A lot of people were working on the more robust, easier to deal with insects of the complex of coccinellids. Bob chose this little sucker right here. I just told him it was a pirate bug in, a dwarf pirate, a dwarf podiasis, in that he was just reverting to his PhD studies again. But aureus is an important predator of soybean aphid, and I don't think we would recognize its valuable contribution if it wasn't for Bob and the students in his lab focusing on this particular generalist predator in the ubiquitous in the soybean system. This slide here from Alejandro Castamagna, who's has done some elegant work with coccinella, just illustrates the point that when you put up cages and exclude predators, you get aphid populations that just rise to enormous levels, demonstrating very conclusively that with the conservation of natural enemies, we can expect a lot of ecosystem services coming out of these natural enemy communities. And we have to be able to start teasing this apart and seeing how we can manage soybean aphid with what we have in the country, along with the classical biocontrol programs that are underway. Predators, though, often get off task, and I borrowed this slide actually from a presentation that Bob gave in an online course that we did in biological control, and that was organized by Kevin Steffi at the University of Illinois, and there was 150 centers around the Midwest that participated in this, and trying to get growers up to speed, seeing people care about not just what's feeding on your crop, but what's also important out in the field. But predators do get off task, and part of the reason is that there's lots of natural habitats, there's lots of alternative prey out there. They may eat aphids, but they may not be the preferred species. And then one fact that I added to his long list was something that has become very apparent in our lab over the last couple of years. Aphid migration kind of trumps everything. You can be going humming right along and get a tremendous influx of aphids, and it doesn't matter how many natural enemies out there, the aphid populations can overwhelm the system. And I'm going to end this with just a couple of data slides from some of the two most recent articles that I've at least read coming out of the O'Neill lab. And I guess I need to point out that for some reason, Minnesota has this habit of getting students that came out of the O'Neill lab and bringing them over to Minnesota, because Nico Deneau and Chris Wykus and now Thelma Heidel all had this O'Neill connection, and now they're in the Heimpel and the Ragsdale lab working hopefully on soybean aphid. Right, Thelma? So, anyway. In this study that Nico did, what they were comparing was, we know aureus loves thrips, and so in these little microcosms that they put up, they had started with 16 aphids, and in 4 days, 16 aphids turn into over 80 aphids if you don't have any thrips. If you add aureus, that population growth rate is less than half. So a highly significant impact of aureus when aphids are in suppressing aphid populations. When you add thrips, you start to see that, well, the aphid populations in without aureus stay the same, but they're starting to climb when five thrips are added to the microcosm. So it's this predator is getting off task. And then when you add enough thrips, aureus switches over to thrips and leaves the aphids alone, and the aphid population is not any significantly different with or without aureus when thrips or enough thrips are present. In a little more diverse plant, a V4 plant, so four trifoliates, a unifoliate, a little bigger plant to search, start off with 32 aphids, the same trend occurs. Without thrips, and you add aureus, you can drive populations of soybean aphid down. You start adding thrips, and you start getting no significant difference between the ultimate aphid population with and without aureus. And when you add enough thrips, again, aureus gets off task, prefers to feed on thrips, and leaves aphids alone. So some very interesting research in alternative preys, and part of the reason why predators are so difficult to work with. And some of the work that Nico did was also looking at when aphids, a single patch, a prey patch of aphids alone versus aphids in thrips, what was the attack rate? So when you have a single aphid prey, the attack rate is significantly higher than when you offer them aphids and thrips. And then when, if you look at the attack on thrips, with and without aphids, the thrips attack is relatively constant over time. Again, you know, showing the preference of aureus to attack thrips. The last paper, which is just now, you can get it as a pre-publication on L. Seaver's website, I learned last night, was from Ho Young, who worked in Bob's, as a postdoc in Bob's lab, and they did some elegant studies looking at how in the field they can manipulate thrip numbers and look at the attack rates of aureus, you know, with over a multiple year period. But one of the things I want to point out here, if you look at all these predator groups in Indiana, dipteran larvae of all stripes, syrphids and camomyeids, and spiders and chrysopid larvae and coccinellid larvae, it's the aureus nymphs and adults that overwhelmingly make up over or approaching 80% of all the natural enemies that are out there. This may not be the case in all soybean fields, but certainly in Indiana, a very strong association with aureus, minute or the pirate bug that is attacking soybean aphid. And this paper will be out in, it was accepted in October, and it'll be out in 2009. So I encourage you to look for that in Biological Control. And with that, I think a review of Bob's contribution would be remiss if you didn't talk about his contribution to finding the resources to doing the biological control. Just a copy of the cover sheet of the last grant that Bob wrote, which was funded, which allowed collaborators across seven northwestern states to work on biological control of the soybean aphid. Bob wrote this proposal, and it was completely funded. We've now incorporated into the 2009 proposal, and the North Central Soybean Growers, one of the many funding programs out there, but I find it remarkable that a commodity organization, now this is a super board, so you know, every state contributes to this North Central Board. They've spent millions of dollars on biological control, also management, and also host plant resistance. It's all combined into a multi-pronged, truly integrated pest management program, but with biocontrol playing a very prominent role. And this was also part of Bob's slides. You know, he wanted to thank the 10 to the 15th aphids, and all the good guys. But one thing that we have to recognize here is that we're going to miss one of the good guys. Thank you.